Welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast with me, your host today, Sam Harris. On this show, we believe anyone can achieve their dreams. We break down things like what it takes to lead explosive tech businesses, to being paid to travel the world. Basically, I find amazing individuals doing cool things and share my insights. On the show today, we have Harsh Sinha, the VP of Engineering at TransferWise, one of the fastest growing fintech businesses in Europe and the world, to be honest. Before TransferWise, he was the Director of Product at PayPal, and before that, the Director of Engineering at eBay. So let's just say it's a very impressive CV, and as such, an absolute goldmine of information. So this is my first interview with someone I've never met before. It represented a much bigger personal challenge, but Harsh was a really personal guy, and that probably explains his CV. Sadly, even though TransferWise gave us the coolest room ever to record in that they use for like dedicating coding sessions and just private meetings, it did have a slightly squeaky table, which sometimes makes an odd appearance, but luckily only once or twice, and my sincere apologies if it's in any way annoying, but it really doesn't last very long. A much bigger issue that we had was the sound recording in general. My microphone was not positioned perfectly or set up quite correctly, and the sound could be better as a whole, and I'm slightly embarrassed about the entire affair and will never make the same mistakes again. So as a word of warning, if you enjoy high quality sound audio, this may not be the podcast for you, but if you enjoy insightful audio that you might have to try hard to always listen to correctly, then this will be perfect for you. So basically, listen at your own discretion and feel free to skip the entire episode if it's not good enough for you. And I'm sorry. Hello, Harsh. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
Can you quickly introduce yourself?
Yeah, so I'm Harsh Sinha. I am Vice President of Engineering at TransferWise, international money transfer platform. Before this, I was at PayPal and eBay. I spent quite a bit of time building different products. And that was in the Valley in San Francisco. Spent a few years, almost a decade there. And then I moved over to London 2 years ago. So I've been with TransferWise for 2 years and spent my time across at different offices. But
so would you say London's quite different to Silicon Valley as a vibe?
Yeah, I think it's quite different, actually. Shoreditch feels a little bit more like the Valley than other parts of London. And I do feel like the San Francisco is like on an overdose of startups and technology right now. So London feels more of a balance. So you can go to different neighborhoods and care about as much startups.
So do you feel a bit more relaxed and like not in such a bubble?
Yeah, I do. I think it's been an interesting thing. I remember when I was joining TransferWise and I told my friends that, hey, I'm going to go and do a stint in London. A lot of my friends were like, so wait, so you want to work at a startup and you're going to London to do that?
Yeah.
Not in the Valley?
They're like, is this possible?
Exactly.
These come from not the Valley?
Yeah. And they're like, and they have an office in Estonia. And where is Estonia? Some folks don't know. So it was very, it was an interesting adventure to embark on, but I think being here, it's been actually a good balance. So you're not always surrounded by techies and startupers, and you know you are in a bubble when you know, half your Uber drivers are pitching you their own ideas.
Wow. Yeah, I haven't had that in London. That's cool. So you brought your whole family over here and stuff?
Yeah, it's me and my wife. Yeah.
Cool. Okay, can you go a bit more into your actual title, like what role does that mean exactly?
Yeah, sure. So basically, I head up engineering at TransferWise. Before me, it was Christo, the founder, one of the founders, who was playing the role. And my role entails basically three things. So the first one would be how do we scale the organization? So how are we hiring? Where are we hiring? What kind of teams are we building out? How is the organization culture? How is it evolving as our team's growing? So when I joined 2 years ago, there were 50 engineers. And now we've grown the team to 130 engineers, so we still continue to grow. So that's the first part, like organizational.
Fast growth.
Yeah. And that has also led to, as a team grows, the different challenges that comes with that, right? So how do we onboard? How do we make sure, the new engineers coming in understand our culture? How do we develop the product? Are they involved in how the decisions are made in this company? How do we keep that ethos around? The second thing is tech. Luckily, we have a strong engineering team, so I don't have to make tech decisions. And we don't have a culture here where we do top-down tech decisions. It's more about how we run in autonomous teams, where we try to have teams make decisions on what architecture and how they would run. There are few rules that cut across all teams, but we try to have less global rules, more localized rules. And the third one is giving context on product. So I build product across the world, over my career, for different demographics, different regions, different solving different problems. So giving that context to the teams on giving that input. So basically, that's kind of like the head of engineering role.
Okay, cool. Because CTO is kind of similar, but not quite the same.
So it's kind of a mishmash, yeah. There's something people say a CTO is more like a guy who sits in the corner and is really good at writes code. Mm. VPN is more about delivery and organization.
Yeah.
And here I think it is a mishmash a little bit. I would like to be writing more code than I am now this week. I'm trying to get back into a service, so hands on again.
Yeah. So you came from a background of coding before,
yeah.
And then get more managerial.
Yeah. I've always done this hybrid. So whether it's been I don't believe in just being managerial, especially in TransferWise, we don't believe in having managers. What are we managing? We want to hire smart people and enable them to have impact. And basically, your lead is a little bit like your coach. So when things are going well, it's great. But you have somebody to go to when you want to talk through different issues, problem solve.
Okay, so you had a lot of experience at PayPal and eBay, then, I guess. Can you dive into that a bit? I'm really interested.
Yeah, sure. So I joined eBay in 2004. And that was, eBay was one of the companies that came out of the dot-com bust and did pretty well. So it didn't go under. It didn't have to go raise more money. It already was public. And when I joined the company, it was still, it was pretty big, but it wasn't massive yet. So I would say I might be wrong in the numbers, but I think we were a few thousand people. So that's still pretty big as compared to where TransferWise was when I joined. Mm-hmm. But by the time I left, eBay had already acquired PayPal. It was an interesting time to join the company. Google hadn't even IPO'd at that time.
Yeah.
eBay was a darling in the stock market. I remember coming to work and, everybody had shares and people checking the stock every 2 hours and the wealth going up, but it was pretty interesting time, very exciting time. The numbers were pretty crazy at that time. Amazon was still pretty small. I remember getting called by Amazon recruiters asking me to interview, and I'd interview with them also, and asking me to come over to Seattle, and they were pitching this whole services-oriented architecture at that time. And one of the big reasons for me to stick on was I was enjoying what I was doing at eBay at that time, and also wanted to be in the Valley and think of things. At that time, Seattle didn't have as big a tech scene. It was Microsoft, and then Amazon was just coming on. And our history is, of course, very different. Amazon's scaled and grown a lot more. But as a company, it was a very different place to work from the perspective of the size. But then teams ran pretty independently. So in my time at eBay, I did a lot of different things. I also was part of two startup acquisitions. I helped acquire two startups into the company. And one of them I helped integrate into the company. So it was called Milo, which was a local shopping engine. And it was a very small team of about 20 people. So that exercise was very much like TransferWise, maybe smaller TransferWise at the time. Much more early product market fit product. And what this company did was basically get a lot of data from different websites of different online and offline retailers, so brick and mortar retailers. So for example, in the US, you can go to Macy's, JCPenney, and buy different clothes. And this portal would allow you, or website would allow you, to find a specific kind of inventory, a specific item, and know whether that specific item is available on the shelf at that time or not. So it had real-time inventory intelligence. And then on top of that, we built eBay's first delivery product. So, you know, right on the time Uber was coming up, we built an app called eBay Now. We experimented with this where you could basically have somebody deliver you a TV to you for $5
wow.
from the recent closest Best Buy within an hour.
What kind of date was that?
What kind of timeline?
Yeah.
It was around 2010, 2011.
Okay.
So delivery had just started picking up.
Yeah.
Amazon
Now, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. So that was, and the Google Shopping Express also came up in the Valley doing something similar. It was a very interesting time to be doing this. And we built this on the layer that Milo had. And then we also built a pretty big infrastructure and product called Buy Online, Pick Up in Store, Click and Collect in the UK. And that was the most successful product because we learned as we iterated that people wanted to use that more.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah, I didn't really know like half the things that go on in Silicon Valley compared to like trials and stuff. So you then went on to PayPal.
Yeah.
You come in again at a similar level of when PayPal was scaling.
Yeah, PayPal was already part of eBay at that time. So PayPal went through a second IPO.
Yeah.
Right after I left. I was at PayPal for a short duration. So I had taken on a role where I was part of the product team, and I was leading the development of the new PayPal product, PayPal mobile apps, so iOS and Android, and also looking into how PayPal would embed their wallet and their payment, mobile payment system into third parties. So for example, Vodafone. Vodafone was seeing Apple Pay come out and people wanting to have their payment instruments on their phone, and a lot of phone providers would want to have a similar functionality and an app already installed on their phone so people could onboard their cards or their bank accounts and then start trying to manage them and use them. And PayPal was one, had already figured this out. So white labeling that, how do we embed and build SDKs and build APIs that other third parties could use PayPal as managing payment instruments on phones.
Cool. So you weren't around during the PayPal mafia days?
No, unfortunately, I was not, no.
Okay. Have you ever been interested in joining a company sort of more early days?
Yeah, that was the reason I joined TransferWise at the time. If you look at my career, I've basically gone from big to small. So I've been going, every change I've done has been smaller, smaller, smaller. When I started, I worked on performance engineering and scaling the eBay APIs and websites. So things that you can't learn in college, you get out and then... I was dropped into a team where, we would get a billion hits a day on our search backend. And the kind of problems that you see there are just very different things that you cannot really run in a lab, right? So, and at that time, it was basically five companies on the planet who would see the kind of volumes, more or less. So it's at that time, it's Yahoo, Google, eBay, Amazon had just started seeing that kind of volume, and then MSN or Microsoft. So those are the places that you could see this kind of, volume and the performance issues that you'd see. So that was my first one. I spent quite a bit of time understanding different systems and how they would break and how do we code and build for having more high availability. And then I started going more into closer to a product. So I worked on eBay Motors, the local product. So every switch was to a smaller and smaller, earlier stage product. And then I came to TransferWise, which was much earlier stage than PayPal.
But you guys have been scaling a lot now.
Yeah.
So do you feel you're more effective in a company as it is growing?
Yeah, personally for me, I think it's just about skill sets. And I think one I haven't tried yet. I've done my own. I've done two companies on the side while I was working at eBay.
Yeah.
There's a great learning experience. So I was building those letters me and another co-founder. But I think TransferWise is an interesting experience because I learned how to take a company from just Series C and where we are now.
Just Series C.
Yes, exactly. Which if you look at my career before that, that was public company, right? So the next step would be to try going smaller.
Yeah.
Kind of keeping in tune with my career, maybe try something with Series B or Series A.
Cool.
I think for me, personally, it's more about the problem
yeah.
solving and like, you know, people I'm working with than the scale of it. Like, and the potential is important. Like, you know, how much impact can I have and can we have on the community? So I think that's important because there are enough Series A companies out there where the scope is small and the potential is small. So that was clear when I was looking for different things to do, that whatever I wanted to work on should have something that I find meaningful, have some experience in, and has potentially big impact.
Yeah. So was it hard to really know what the team would be like though when you're moving from like Silicon Valley to London? Like, was it a lot of interviews that you had initially to sort of gauge everything, or were you just kind of like hitting hope, like they seem really cool? And
yeah, actually, TransferWise, I say this, said this before, TransferWise and I dated for 9 months.
Nice.
So there were quite a few chats I had with the founders before. Then I flew into Estonia. At that time, our team was much bigger in Estonia. The London team wasn't as big. It was like 6 people here in engineering at the time. And the team in Estonia was pretty big. And I spent 3 days and nights with the guys there working through a problem. And also while on the site getting interviewed and then spending time or dinner drinks with the guys. It was during one of the darkest times in Estonia in the year. It was in November. So it gave me a feeling of like what it means to be moving to Europe, especially in the winter. I had never lived before I moved to Europe, I had never lived in the cold. When I grew up in India and then moved to San Francisco. So,
yeah, it's different.
So it was a long process, but it gave me the confidence of, I thought the team was very, very good and strong. The problem that we are solving was close to home a little bit for me, given I've lived in different parts of the world and I have family all over the world. Money is something for people who do that. And then it helped where, as I talked to the founders, and I talked to a lot of startup founders, I'm an advisor for a few startups. Within a 9-month period, the story didn't change much.
Yeah.
Which gave me validation that, hey, things are not as fickle as it can be for small companies.
So you said like one of your main priorities is building the teams and stuff. So you helped them scale the London office from 6 to like 160 people now.
So the total team size is, for engineering is 130, but London, I believe is now at like close to 40. So,
all right.
So we have offices in teams in Tallinn, Estonia, London, Budapest, where we started building last year, a small team in Cherkasy, Ukraine, and then we just started hiring in
Germany. So do you go out to like New York and stuff then, and all those places to help with the hiring
process? Yeah, I do. I try and spend more time in Europe because that's where the bigger teams are. But for New York, I've been spending a little more time there. I also look at the US product and have inputs into that. So kind of spend time with the team there. But try to make it there like once a quarter, but more time where I can.
Cool. So when you're building a team, what are the main problems you try to overcome and go into that process?
Yeah. So when I got here, we had a fantastic team, but it was clear like we were moving. We had a lot more to do than the number of people we had. There were a lot of firefighting going on. Also, there was like a lot of knowledge which was like in one person's head. And it was just like how startups scale and grow, right? So there's much more to do than people. So it was clear like we need to scale the teams up pretty quickly. And when you're building a team, I think it's important to think about two things. One is how do you understand that the person who's coming in doesn't think that this is just another job? And the second one is, I said this before, it's hard if you hire, there's this concept of 10x engineers. And I'm not a big believer in 10x engineers. I think 10x engineers are good. Like people are very good and can do a lot of different things and like code very fast and build very fast. That's awesome. But I look for people who are good and smart, but are team players. And a lot of times in my experience, and this could be a little biased, but a lot of 10xers tend to leave the team behind and just build, sit in the corner and build, which is great for like short term because things can get done. I think for the sustainability of the company and like scaling the company, I think that actually does a lot of damage.
Yeah,
so look for people who are more, you know, collaborative, bring the team along. Don't introduce new technologies because they think it's cool and it's cutting edge, but actually think about the ramifications of their co-engineers and teammates on how they would have to have a steep learning curve. Introduce stuff only when it's needed.
Yeah, on that note, do you have much debate of what technologies you're going to be using going forwards? Because I know you've been using Angular and then like React's getting a lot bigger these days. Are you sort of contemplating changing and things, or are you kind of happy with your tech stack at the moment?
Yeah, we're always looking at new tech and whether we should be bringing that in. So we run an Angular. We have a little bit of React. So we've experimented with that. We'll see. The way we work here is, as I said before, there are fewer global rules. One of the global rules is like we are a VM shop, So, you know, we look at, you know, if you look at our monolith, so we have a monolith which was built, like a lot of startups have a monolith at the beginning. You basically have one code base, easier to ship, easier to know when done, and just be able to, like, you know, have all engineers building the same code base gives them the ability to, like, have an impact on all the different parts of the product because they know most of it because they're the same code base. Now we're going to the transition of going from monolith to microservices. As our team's grown, being in the monolith causes other problems where we step on each other's toes and shipping gets harder. So a monolith was is in Grails, Groovy and Grails, and so that's VM based. And then our microservices stack is basically Spring Boot with Java 8. And again, the idea was picking something that we have a lot of people in the market who kind of know that, so that we can hire people and keep growing the team without having too much specialty. And the second one is it's a proven technology. Java has a big history, so when we do hit issues, we have enough to go back on and experience to go back on and being able to, like, solve those issues. So one of the big things that we have here is, like, hey, if you want to bring in a new technology for the production systems, which is moving money, having it as a VM is good because people in the team have experience. And the other rule we have is if you want to introduce something new, new tech just should not spring up and be a sudden surprise to the rest of the organization. If you are passionate about bringing in something new, let's say you want to deploy Docker in production, then do a pro and con, like, you know, and do a techs. So we have a standing meeting on Fridays called Technical Exchange, where engineers join in and different topics are discussed. And if you want to bring in technology, you basically present to yourself why we should bring this into our infrastructure. And the idea here is that you're educating others as to what is out there, what problem it would solve, why we should do it now. And you are cognizant that you are going to ask fellow engineers around you to have a new steep learning curve, where they spend time learning this new tech instead of shipping customer-facing product. That's how we work. And then within teams, smaller decisions on tech are made. So especially as we go to microservices, if that team thinks that there is a library that helps them do something better, they should try it out. They own it. They completely have the life cycle of that specific tech being introduced into the ecosystem.
How much time do you focus on, like, building versus trying new things and testing and stuff?
It's a good question. I don't know if I can give you a percentage. I think we hire in a way that engineers here are very, like, you know, overthinking, always like looking to learn themselves. Text is one of the ways that people share knowledge of that. And then there are, you know, like, we have trainings that we don't, like, have training as in everybody has to go to this specific training about this thing. But we recently had a security training. So, like, you know, we brought in somebody externally as our profile's growing, you know, security becomes more and more important.
Yeah.
And there's certain things that we wanted somebody external to come and talk about in the industry that's happening. That was one of the more recent organized trainings where a 20-engine company attended and they went through a hands-on experience on it. But then we also have people who basically gather together and, like, want to learn specific languages or do certain things, experiment with that. And we have trainings for that. If they want to do it, then, like, you know.
Yeah, sure. Have you been involved in any of those? Like,
less in the other ones, security training I was involved in.
Okay. So if you had to pick a side project to build in, like, a new technology, what technology do you think you'd do it in?
Ah, that's interesting. So if it was my own side project, like, not TransferWise.
Yeah, it's like a fun app that you want to
build. Yeah, I'd probably do something in iOS. I actually haven't developed and deployed anything on iOS yet myself. I've done Android programming before. I've done a mobile app before. And I've done server-side. I've done sites, but I haven't done any of this. So yeah, I'd probably pick that. I've actually been thinking about what would be a problem, what would be an app I would build. So I'll probably just do that. So that's more like from a learning perspective.
Yeah.
But I'm actually usually pretty tech agnostic. I try to think about what customer problem am I solving.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I've done something in Python before. I've built in Flask. I've done Django. Now you take me back because it's like a few years ago. But yeah. So I basically, whatever I'm comfortable with and whatever will get me going fast. Mm. So one of the sites that I built a while back was a aggregator of, like, you know, if you remember Living Social, Groupon, all these, like, there was a bunch of them spinning up at that time in, like, 2008, 2009 as deal sites. But a lot of them required you to give your information up, and they had you had to give people email to get access to this information. And they didn't have a lot of ways to, like, localize the deals for you. So, like, you know, our idea was we aggregate all these cross platforms. At that time when we started the company, there were 140 different deal sites in the US. Mm-hmm. So then you would have deals that you'd not be able to localize deals. So that was the idea. And, you know, for that we used Python because it's easier to do script and those lovely to, like, go crawl stuff.
Cool. Backtrack a bit to the team building. When you're hiring new employees, you said you look, people are always interested in like learning new things. What are your favorite questions to get insights into a new employee?
So I actually just came from an interview. So I have the luxury of usually folks who come, by the time they're talking to me, they've already gone through a tech test and a product test.
Mm.
So my chat can be a little bit more open-ended. And I usually talk through person's experience, starting with like, you know, one of the questions I like asking is, talk me through a tough technical problem that you worked through in your last 2 years.
Mm.
It's a very open-ended question. But it's a very, I feel it's a very good question, which gives me insight on how to think about, first of all, what's tough, what's technical.
Mm.
You'd be surprised how many people have gone answer this question with something that wasn't very technical.
Yeah.
A lot of people ended up going towards organizational problems. And then it's a very open-ended question where, you know, it shows me, can a person explain what they did to somebody who's like, you know, I'm technical, I can understand, build different systems, but really be able to explain it at a place where you're clear and crisp on what the problem was and how did you solve it.
Mm.
And what tech did you use? What were the solutions? What was the real gnarly part of the problem? And then it's also open-ended, so you can go deeper into like applying different lenses over it. Second thing I ask is around motivation, like why would you want to join TransferWise as opposed to other companies? And one way I ask the question is which other companies would you want to join? What kind of companies would you want to join? And that gives me an interesting understanding of what's motivating you to come here. So is it because, you know, we are a company which is on a high growth curve and attracts a different kind of talent.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's exciting to just be with a brand. Is it because you actually care about the problem? You actually use the product? It's always great because you have very specific understanding of problems. And we believe that kind of talent coming into the company, like you get onboard faster and you have really good insights. And then some people, you know, have thoughts around, again, organization. Some people just wanted to have a new job. So it's an interesting way to like understand what your motivations are.
Yeah. Have you found that's changed then as you guys have been scaling? Because when you first started, it was a much smaller company and sort of the money transfer market was a much smaller online presence, whereas now it's there's a lot of competitors and apps that will do it. Like, so as people answered, yeah, what's kind of the answer more like these days compared to the start?
Yeah, I think definitely we had a lot more people in the earlier days who were users of a product. They knew about us because they used us. So it was interesting where they really cared about what we did and how we built it and like what problem we were solving.
Mm.
Now, as we've grown bigger and like in 2 years later, the brand's stronger, especially in London. So we do get a lot of candidates who might not have used the product, but think we are cool, like a good brand to come work for, have a good work culture, stuff like that. So that's what I try to suss out, whether are you actually just joining the company or are you actually just still joining a startup which is trying to like have a massive impact on the problem that we're trying to solve, and you're not just a 9-to-5 job kind of thing. You mean, like, people who work here have a different kind of drive to basically deliver. It's not like you can't have a flexible schedule here, but it's more about passion that you have around solving the problems.
Like Prince's office before, it's a really nice place to just be in general. Do you find that helps a lot, having just a nice environment? And how does it compare to like Silicon Valley? So you just kind of hear things about people going crazy, like being bags everywhere and SNS.
We do have a good office. I think it helps. Like, I think it helps having an environment which is open, like, you know, and where people feel comfortable coming and working and like, you know, working with their colleagues. I think it compares quite a lot to some of the offices in the Valley. I don't think we've gone super crazy. I mean, we do have a sauna in our office, which is goes back to the tradition, given that we have Estonian founders and, like, you know, they love their sauna. It's actually a good conversation starter also.
Yeah, I bet.
But other than that, like, you know.
Should have done this in the sauna.
Yeah.
Nightmare.
Other than that, like, you know, we have a pretty simple. I mean, I think it's a good office. It's compared to the other Valley offices, but I don't think it's like crazy extravagant or anything. Like, you know, we don't have a lot of like Twitter, Airbnb, a lot of the other companies would do like free food, for example, like fully staffed kitchen, gourmet chefs.
Yeah.
You know, like breakfast, lunch, dinner.
Yeah,
so we have functional food. We want people to be healthier, so we have cereal and like fruits. We definitely believe that people should be eating more fruits.
Yeah.
And then we have a once a week. So on Fridays, we usually have a speaker, external speaker coming in. for what we call a Lunchwise. So they'll be different. They'll be from different parts of the industry. Could be politicians. Could be these interesting people. Like last time we had an author wrote a book about Russian and Baltic states.
Yeah, I had a lunch here one time. It's quite healthy. So I was talking to some guys at Salesforce, and they have a thing called the Salesforce Stone, where like everyone that joins Salesforce puts on a stone because they have so much chocolate and snacks and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, maybe this is a bad thing.
To have free soda and chocolates at eBay and PayPal too.
Just free. It's fine.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so you mentioned some side projects. Like, what's your standard day routine? Do you have much time for doing sort of hobbies and things?
Actually, I did more before I joined TransferWise. I had a side project first year, TransferWise. And then at the end of that year, it was just getting very, very hard for me to scale both. So it reached a place where we launched the Android app. The website was up and running. There were other founders who can run it now.
Okay.
So I took a step back. And lately, I've been trying to think of it's been a year. I'm getting a little itchy. So trying to think of, as I said before, maybe going building an iOS app, something meaningful. But
some small money related again?
I don't know, actually. I probably wouldn't do it money related. I've done quite a bit of money stuff already. So I'm passionate about education.
Yeah.
I'm passionate also about, given the political structure right now, how do we have people listen to the other side of the conversation?
Mm.
Especially in the US, I spent most of my time there. There's a big divide between blue and red, Democrats and Republicans. And I think a lot of that is because people tend to be in their own bubble. So you tend to pick friends who have your same own.
Yeah, so your Facebook feed.
Exactly. So how do you solve that problem? Because I do believe that a lot of people are gray. They're not they're in the middle. So they can, in some things they're red, in some things they're blue. So maybe something around that.
Do you have any other hobbies?
Yeah, I actually, the way I de-stress, my main hobby is basketball. I haven't been playing as much. I used to play 4 times a week when I was back in San Francisco. But with the travel that I have now, it's a little harder. But we have now a basketball group of people who play basketball here.
Oh, cool.
So on Tuesdays, I'm trying to make that game more, even though the last few weeks I've been traveling.
Yeah.
And then when I'm also in different towns and different offices, like in Estonia, we've had a few pickup games before. So that's definitely one thing I really enjoy.
Now, where do you live in London?
I live, right now I live south of the river. I live near Canada Water. I used to live in Highbury.
Oh, cool. I live near there. But I've been doing basketball with my flatmate.
Oh, cool. Maybe I'll hit you up. Yeah.
Bermondsey. Next stop. Sweet. Yeah, books. Do you have any books that really interest you or have helped you along the way?
Yeah, so I think there have been books that I've read along the way. I hope to be reading more, but I think in the last year my reading has gone down. But
We can reach now.
You sound
that cool.
Okay. So yeah, for books, I hope to read more than I do right now. And last year, I think my reading has gone down a little bit. I think one or two books that I would recommend that I think had a big impact on me around how do we build teams and product was, one of them is a pretty famous Lean Startup by Eric Ries. And then I was fortunate enough to be in an incubator when I was at Berkeley with Steve Blank, who is one of the founders of the Lean Startup movement, Original Principles. Eric Ries studied under him at Stanford and wrote the book. So Steve's got these two books called 4 Steps to Epiphany and Startup Owner's Manual. And all of them kind of hover on the same thing, but they have a different way of communicating it. But they talk about customer discovery and how, as engineers, it's very easy for us to build. So we take a problem and we just go and solve it without thinking about whether what we're solving is something that the market really needs. Would the customer care for it? So that's why most side projects die. And I'm a firm believer in you only have so much time, so you should be trying to put time into, I believe that I should be putting time into where it can have impact.
Mm.
And if you're trying to build a product, the best way to understand what you're trying to build, because you probably will be wrong. 99.9% of what you come up with will be not what you will end up building.
Yeah.
So how do you get out of the building and talk to customers quickly and figure out what is it that you can build and what's the business model around it? So, and I think these books are very, very helpful in cutting through a lot of the other BS that's around, gives you a framework on how to build. And on the non-work side.
Yeah.
Most of my reading is non-work. I like to travel a lot, and I really, really enjoy Bill Bryson as an author.
He
spent a lot of time in England and then spent time in the States and here. Especially now that I'm in Europe, he's got a lot of books in Europe. So it's actually fascinating for me to read because they're light reads. And they also are very insightful around different cultures. So, you know, just trying to understand how different people think, different idiosyncrasies, different countries have, different people have, and reading that in a lighthearted way is that's good. Yeah, I'm a big history buff. So, but I tend to just pick up different articles. Like, you know, it's kind of weird how I read. I read through, like, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts, like a lot. A few things that I always listen to is like Alec Money.
Yeah.
Pretty good podcast, I think. It's pretty, like, it's interesting where it's not just about, you know, hardcore money. Like, they cover like a wide range of topics. And I do like going through the general stuff more, like being more broad, because I think on a day-to-day we can be very deep and specific. The other one that I really like is there's an interesting one that I found last year called 50 Things That Changed the Modern Economy. It's like this very you know, short podcast, like 9 to 10 minute podcast. So, like, you know, if you're on a train journey in London across like 5 or 6 stops.
If your house was burning down and you had time to take one item from your house, what item would it be?
Yeah, so after everybody's been saved.
Obviously not your wife.
Yeah, just to clarify that. I think I'd probably go back in and grab, we have a hard drive. Yes, we still do have a hard drive of photos and vacation, like, memories and stuff. So I'd probably grab that. And while on the way out, I might, if I can, grab my passport.
Yeah, that's
a
useful item to have.
Yeah.
Is that because you travel a lot or just because?
Yeah, I travel a lot. And I think, of course you can go back and get a new passport, but just think it's a while. So, and you should have some form of identity. Being an immigrant and living in four countries, I know that identity is important.
Wasn't the first thing that sprang to my mind, but I've always kind of been in Britain and not had a worry. But so you had a lot of, moving to America is a hard one.
Yeah.
So you had a lot of issues with that, or was it because you were hired?
Yeah, I didn't have a lot of issues because I moved for school. So for college, so I went to do my master's in computer science. And then I ended up working there. So I got hired to eBay and then went through the regular immigration process for residency. So it wasn't hard, but it was long, especially in the US. It's a very long process, especially if you come from certain countries, because the way the US immigration system works is that no matter how big the country is, like number of people, they give out the same number of residency permits across all countries. So you have an advantage if you come from a country where a lot of people are not moving to as well. From India or say China or Philippines and Mexico, the lines are usually long.
Yeah, I've been to the US 3 times. Every time I've had like a massive running.
Yeah.
And the one time I was walking from Vancouver, like it's hitchhiking down to Seattle.
Oh wow!
And they were not happy with me at all.
I would imagine.
I didn't think I was going to get it. Like, the amount of time I was like, absolutely no, but then somehow I got through. Yeah, what purchase of like smaller value have you made that really satisfies you or helps your daily life?
Find smaller value, like $100 or
under 100 quid, like Fitbit or something, maximum level.
I am wearing a Fitbit right now. I do think it helps me quite a bit. As I said before, like I used to be working out more before, especially basketball, than I've been recently, but I'm trying to, like, now I'm trying to do my first half marathon. So I don't know how that's going to go. But I think the Fitbit is pretty neat device, which helps, like, you know, nudge you to do things a little differently and change your habits little by little. Like, it's got this function where, like, if you're sitting in sitting down for like an hour, then it buzzes at you.
Oh, that's cool.
That reminds you to just get up and walk around, which I think is nifty and it's good. And it's very, very hard for people to change, become very active very quickly, and like that's where people usually fail. So I think by having small changes in habits over a sustained period of time can have a bigger benefit.
Yeah, I've started like not having lunch until I've done like a round of sit-ups or press-ups or something, and everyone's just like, Sam, you're really weird. And like, yeah, but at least it happens at least once a day.
Yeah.
Because by the time like, I get ready to bed and I haven't done anything, I'm like too tired to then do something else, and it's like, Can you describe any major oh shit moment you've had and what you did to deal with it? Has TransferWise gone down ever?
Yeah, definitely. Yes, I'd be lying if I said it hasn't. Yeah, it has. And we've had moments like that. But I think as you build a system like ours, and so we have a lot of partners we connect to, and like we have a lot of moving parts to a system, going down is an inevitable thing. It's about how quickly we can recover from it. That's what matters. We've had outages. We've gotten better at recovering from them now. We've had a case where we pushed out something which was, we pushed out a new localization change. So we were trying to localize a website going to different languages. And we had this one service where every incoming visitor would basically be assigned this experiment to see whether we should show them the Portuguese language, for example. And the service that we were using was a little bit older to do this assignment. It's a little bit older code. And it had, for every visitor that was coming to the site, it would go and make a database call and do certain kind of assignments, kind of increase the number of people in the experiment, and basically would have a lock on the database. And this was a call which was synchronous to the call stack to render the front page. And basically what would happen is the thread would wait until this call would come back. And that started causing our threads to stack up, because like it was a lot more, as we increased the amount of people who were in the experiment, there's a lot more people, a lot more database connections, and that connections on the database started stacking up. And then basically that meant the execution of the thread to render the home page was slower and slower, and then connections started stacking up on our servers, and eventually we could just not take. And if you think about it, it really wasn't that important to run this test to see like whether we should assign Portuguese or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because eventually, of course, we want you to be able to use the site, and a lot of our users will still be able to use our English site. So it was a one small setup mistake in the way it was set up for this to be synchronous that caused caused problems with the site coming down. So we found it and we were able to fix it, but it was a very interesting, one of the more interesting outages that we had. This was a while back.
Yeah, so you have like the whole team just going like, crap, what's going on? How do we fix this?
Yeah, so we have, we obviously have alerts and monitoring on our site and our mobile apps and APIs. So of course, alerts started firing, and then people were like, hey, looks like the site's going down, like it's intermittent. And then the customers started tweeting about it. And then we had customers calling customer support.
Yeah.
So we found it pretty quickly. And then we started to understand like what was the change that caused this. Mm-hmm. And usually the fastest way to find an issue on the site is to go back and see what has changed in the last 10 minutes or 2 hours, or whenever we started seeing this first. And we isolated it.
Who would you describe as your hero?
So I think this is a very interesting question. I think I don't know how much you and your followers follow cricket.
Yeah.
Me neither, actually.
But I'm sure there are people who listen. They should Google this guy. His name is Sachin Tendulkar. He is a very famous cricketer. He's probably one of the most famous players now after Don Bradman to play the game.
Mm.
He retired. He's an Indian cricketer. He entered the game around the same time when I was growing up. So I was kind of nine when he joined. And
yeah.
He was the youngest cricketer to ever play, 16 when he joined. Playing at the international level. And the reason why I really admire him is because every time, so he had a big career, like I think he played 30 years. And so that kind of perseverance and tenacity is very rare to find in sport, especially. He broke all records. But the biggest reason why I respect him a lot is every time he went out to play, he had the hope of 1.2 billion people.
Yeah.
And I'm not exaggerating this at all. Like Indian cricket, so Indians are massive cricket fans. And there's a saying that there's only two things that will unite India, 1.2 billion people, that's cricket and war. And definitely cricket's the bigger one, I think. So I think to be able to sustain through that long period, perform at the level he did, go through all the controversies and come out clean, and be in the media limelight and have the pressure of that many people's hopes every day when he went out to play for so long, I think it requires a very interesting kind of mindset. And he's, from what I know, I've never met him, but from what I know, he's very humble.
Yeah.
He still lives in a very small community.
Have you got any life advice for people sort of starting out, or even if they're older, like what they should be doing? Or
one advice I would have, and it's advice that I would give to my 22-year-old self too, is take risks earlier in life. So when you're in your 20s, it's not necessarily important to go and work for that big company, get that big first job and get the salary. obviously money is important. I won't say that it's not. I think the earlier, younger you are, especially when you're getting out of college, you probably got to like have a very simple lifestyle. You've probably shared rooms, like lived off ramen, done stuff like that. I don't have a lot of worldly belongings. I would say it's a good time to like try and start your own company, take risks. And I think because as you get older, it gets harder. You have other things that you have to take care of. So I think it's important when you're younger to be able to either go and take a role which is in a company where you get a lot of experience, like wear different hats. Because over time, you will have that experience of like taking something small. And then you can always go to a stable setup and be able to still have a good life. So I think taking risks at a younger age is something I would suggest people.
Okay. But should not take risks once old then?
I think it's obviously good if you could. I think it just gets harder. That's it.
Yeah.
Like, for a lot of people, you have a family and you have to be a certain financially careful about certain things if you have kids. So it just gets harder. I'm not saying it's not good. Obviously it's good. But it's just it's easier. So you should do it when it's easier.
Cool. Yeah. Try to explain that same process to my dad. And
but
you should work for a bigger company or something. Yeah, but now they think I need to.
Yeah. And I think it's getting easier and easier. Like I think even from the time I started to today, like if you think about even setting up something, so much easier, AWS, Heroku. Like, you don't have to have that big of bank balance to set up anything, and you can experiment a lot. Even when I started with exists, we actually did have to go and buy, a server, a computer, and run it under our desk and stuff like that.
All right, that's the end of the episode. We forgot to mention how to reach out to Harsh if you want to get in touch with him. He does get a lot of unsolicited email already, so he didn't feel like giving you his email. But you can contact him on Twitter, at HarshSinner, all one word and no punctuation. As you have the episode downloaded, you should just see the spelling in the show title. But if you need to know, Harsh is spelled like the word Harsh, H-A-R-S-H, and Sinner is spelled S-I-N-H-A, or Sierra Indigo November Hotel Alpha. If you didn't get that. Cool. In general, what an awesome name, Harsh. Like, I was realizing that if I was called Harsh, I'd be Harsh Harris, which is like possibly the most gangster name ever. How awesome is that name? I guess it's like a little bit too late for me now. I mean, maybe I could change my name. I'm having one of those weeks where I should just redefine my life anyway. But yeah, maybe I won't do that. However, my firstborn child could definitely be called Harsh Harris, regardless of gender. Like, how awesome would that be? Like a little Harsh running around, he's a girl. my future wife is definitely going to be down with that. I mean, it's better than being called Apple or something. I mean, no offense to anyone that's called Apple. Names are just names anyway. It's people define the names. Let's move on from this conversation, Sam. Right. If you're interested in a job at TransferWise, now that we've discussed how to apply and do an interview, then they are usually hiring. And if you're a developer, I would certainly look into the console challenge that they have on their website, which is a lot of fun and give you some brownie points if you are trying to apply. If you've never used TransferWise, then I would highly recommend the service for transferring your currency from one form to another at minimal fees. And if you've never used it, then you can sign up using my link on the website. Or if you want to sign up for their pioneering borderless bank account, which allows you to open a local currency account in several countries without any real paperwork or hassle, which is quite frankly amazing, then again, you can follow my link on the website. Back to the borderless bank account. So good. I literally spent about a month trying to sort paperwork to open an N26 account in Germany. And I finally did it in sort of slightly faked an address and did other things just so that I could have an account in euros. And then I got back to England and went onto my TransferWise to send some money to my N26 account. And they just released the borderless account. And so I instantly had a euro bank account anyway and was like, oh, great. I just wasted a lot of time doing something I don't need to do. But it's amazing. So if you like having currencies in other formats, then you should have a borderless bank account. Harsh gives a lot of good advice in the episode. And as always, I like to lay out my favorite tips. 1. When building a team that scales, using so-called 10x engineers can be toxic and is not worth the risk. Check that someone is a team player first and has the right alignment with the company, then assess how good they are after that. 2, take risks early in life and try wearing some different hats. See what suits you and commit to big ideas before life gets in the way. 3, in tech, it is inevitable that things will break at some point. Don't be so sure of yourself that good processes will just prevent any failures occurring. So always keep in place good monitoring and ensure that you catch any problems early and can diagnose or roll back and fix the problem as quickly as possible. As always, thanks a lot for listening. If you found the podcast useful, please support me by rating the podcast on iTunes or your preferred app. Please become a subscriber and share your favourite podcast with others, as it really helps me grow the podcast. I'm Sam, and this has been another episode of the Growth Mindset Podcast. I hope you enjoy your day.